You're listening to The Chris Cerrone Show. Inspiring interviews with entrepreneurs and awesome people that will motivate you to take action now.
Now,
your host, Chris Cerrone.
Hello, welcome back, and holy moly, do I have a show for you. Let me tell you a couple things about this next guest, about this next show. There's so much to go into. First of all, for some weird reason, whatever reason, this thing was hiding out in the depths of my computer, and for some reason, it never aired. I have no idea why. I'm going to write my guest an email as soon as I'm done with this apologizing because for whatever reason it slipped through the cracks. So with that said, it's not old per se. It's one of my first interviews I've done, by the way. So it's kind of cool to hear the transition and the change and all that from the show perspective. But it's not old in the sense of what we're talking about. We get into so much detail and how-tos and tips and this, that, and the other on this particular episode that when I was listening back to it, I was like, holy moly, why the heck did this thing not go out when it should have? Now, with that said, I believe everything happens for a reason. Maybe now it's this guest's time, right? Maybe it's that time for this show to be released. Maybe you're listening right now and you're having some of these questions and we're about to answer them on this episode. I don't know. I'll tell you what I do know. This is episode 58 of the Cerrone Show, CerroneShow.com/58 for the show notes. That's all I got. I'm done talking. Let's go. I am really thrilled to have my next guest on. And the reason why, as a small business owner, in the past myself, I know what it means to market, to advertise, to have an online presence. And coming from that world, I realized that people to this day, it's 2014, people to this day don't really do this. And my message here today with my guest, I want to get this out there. I want people to not only know about the marketing and the advertising of small business, but my guest individually, you know, what he has done. He has spent the last 20 years working with businesses on their marketing and advertising with some big names like The Village Voice. He is a published author. And if you plan on picking a fight with this guy, I'd be careful because he does know jujitsu. Aaron Fletcher, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Pretty good, Chris. Thanks for having me on today, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was joking about the jujitsu part. Now, is that something you learned as a child, or did you get into it later in life?
No, good question. So as we all kind of get out of school and become complacent and spend too much time in front of the computer, we look for other ways to be competitive or at least move around. And I found Brazilian jujitsu after watching the first UFCs in the early 90s, not to date myself, but I've been doing it ever since. It's a really cool way to kind of get out of the office for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, everyone now, they're into MMA, UFC, fighting, health, wealth, all that. Did you find practicing jujitsu helped you in your personal life in terms of how you felt, discipline, all of that?
Sure. That's a great question. And I think it's funny because you go into something like that just to kind of blow off steam and like any other form of exercise. But then you realize quickly it's a lifestyle. All those things, those cliches you hear about you know, discipline and focus and respect and honor, that those things really exist because every day you can't BS yourself if there's another guy trying to kind of take you down or choke you or something. You know, you can't beef up your own ego, and it keeps you real humble.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And the reason why I bring that up, I mean, personally, I am a fan of sports and action sports and martial arts, boxing, just basically all that. And more so of a fan, I'm intrigued on some of the things that these guys go through in the training process, in the you know, the behind the scenes that people usually don't see, they have to go through some hardcore stuff.
Yeah, it's funny because I draw a parallel with, you know, between athleticism and business and mixed martial arts and marketing, because if you look at a mixed martial artist, they have to be good at, you know, wrestling, boxing, you know, diet, conditioning, kickboxing, and jujitsu, much like small business owners are challenged because you have to be at least conversant at so many things now in this new digital age, at least, you know, to get any kind of traction online. You have to know a little bit about copywriting, maybe something about WordPress, social media, you know, direct response marketing. So I think that's a big challenge for business owners is grappling with all those different skill sets.
So what do you think that challenge is? And thank you for bringing it into the business owner. What do you think that challenge is? Let me just paint a picture real quick, right?
Sure.
I am, you know, Chris Cerrone. And let's say I open up a donut shop, right?
Good choice.
I love donuts.
You too, unfortunately.
I open up a donut shop. Things are going well. I made that 1 year mark, right? I passed the 1 year mark. I'm still a thriving business, but I really haven't reached the success that I would like to. I don't have an online presence because I'm scared. Why do you think that happens? Because that seems to be a commonality.
Well, there's a couple of reasons. I think it's important. That's a real scenario, and those are the kind of people I hear from all the time. Everything from people that do horseback riding to running hair salons and donut shops. And the common thread, the big challenge is that there's so much noise out there online that it's hugely distracting. You know, all that we always hear about the bright, shiny object syndrome, and it's never been more true than in the online environment. You get emails about, here's how you tweak your LinkedIn page, or do you need to you know, constant contact, or what is SEO, and Google this and Google that. And it's confusing because there's not a clear path out there for business owners.
So what would you suggest? What is basically step one?
Good question. For a brick and mortar business, since we're kind of following that example, the first and most valuable thing you can do is find out the interests and questions of who your target audience is. So a donut shop is kind of a funny one because it's not as, and it's actually, it's challenging. So let's use that because that's
why I picked it.
I mean, if you can get traction on social media and blogging with donuts, you can do it with anything, right? Because other areas are more complex, but this is a beautiful, simple example. So people in your area that are going to buy or eat donuts, consume donuts, the first thing you need to do is think about what interests them, what questions they might have. So say somebody might want to make their own donuts. Say people in their area might want to have other breakfast combinations or have ideas for things to eat for breakfast. And more importantly than that, people that come to your donut shop, say, what city would your donut shop be in? Las Vegas?
Yeah, let's just say Las Vegas.
So they have other interests because they're residents of Las Vegas. So they might be tourists, they might be residents. But if you, the first step is to launch a basic blog, a basic WordPress blog that you can launch in 5 minutes. You know, you should have it on your own website, ideally, and simply write down 40 or 50 questions people might have about donuts and just kind of go out and a radius from there. So about breakfast, about living in Las Vegas, family activities to do. So if you really, if you look at the ideal person that's walking into your donut shop, and you really make that person real by coming up with what we call an avatar. So, you know, what would be the average donut shop customer? Tell me, how old are they? Are they a family person? What in your donut shop, what's the average customer like?
So I'm going to make this up on the fly because obviously I do not have a donut shop. But let's say, oh, man, my avatar is going to be the soccer mom.
Okay. So the soccer mom, and now obviously this is a much longer thing, but to make this brief for the sake of example, that soccer mom has interests, challenges in her life. She probably has a busy schedule. She has kids that she has to feed. Hopefully donuts are a treat, but we won't get judgmental here. So that soccer mom has all these interests and this whole life in your city there in Las Vegas, things to do with kids, best What are the best day trips with kids, best weekend getaways for families, the best activities to do with your family in Las Vegas. So if you look at as becoming a reference point for living in Las Vegas and not just make it about the pastries and donuts you're trying to sell somebody, so just write down a list of 50 or 100, you and everybody in your donut shop, write down a list of everything. Do you think it'd be fun to make donuts at home on Sunday morning with your children? And how many people have ever learned how to make a donut themselves? I think that would be fun.
Yeah, I like where you're going with this, because a lot of businesses, small, big, medium, whatever, it's push, right? It's push marketing. It's buy my this, buy my that. We're having a sale. We're doing this. And what you're basically saying is try to be a part of the community. Try to give some context, try to give back and help and be almost like a source, for whatever business you may have in whatever region you're in. Like, be that source, be that guide, because what that's going to do is it's going to humanize your business. They're not going to just see you as a brand trying to sell you something. They're going to see you as, hey, Chris Cerrone's donut shop just gave me, some tips on dog walking in the park. I'm just making this up as I go along, but
that's true.
And they're going to use those tips, and then they're going to almost feel that connection with your business.
So, and that's exactly right. I'm glad you bring that up, because too many people are asking instead of giving. And that's, the new book from Gary Vaynerchuk, Jab, 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 Right Hook.
I love that book.
It's a wonderful book, and it follows the same methodology that inbound marketing, when you said push, the opposite of that is to pull with compelling content. But to break this really down to ground level and talk about tactics, like how would that donut shop do this? So start a basic blog, write down all these questions, blog with simple answers to people, those questions and interests in the community. But more importantly, the next step is, so once you have that avatar, you're writing blog posts, there's a couple things. Number one, put together a simple one-page recipe on how to make donuts at home and have that be an opt-in on your website, because so many business owners miss the boat. They miss 80, I'm talking about 80 or 90% growth. They could grow 500% in 2 years if they simply understood that. How many people come into your, let's look at offline and online. So how many people walk into the average donut shop per week? I don't know. Let's just say 300, right?
Yep.
How often do those people come back for donuts, and how much contact or control do I have over communicating with those customers? So, when you go to a donut shop or a restaurant, when's the last time a waiter, waitress, or cashier said, hey, if you want to give me your email address, I'll give you a free chocolate donut? They totally don't see the value in growing a list. And if Facebook goes out of business, which is unlikely, but if your website is down, if Facebook crumbles, if the whole internet, the whole interwebs kind of break, you have control over that. What a mentor of mine calls owning the race course. You have control over your list. So on your website, if you simply put a one-page guide, a recipe for making donuts at home with your kids, because the avatar is that soccer mom, they give their email address. Now, over the course of a year, you have names of a couple thousand people in your community. Everyone that comes into your donut shop, you build a list. So after you start making content and having a basic site up, you need to have a list magnet, a conversion magnet, something of high value that you can give away. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So, real quick, just to kind of bring it back, the one thing I would say to the listeners, whether you have a small business or you're starting one or whatever, right? First and foremost, start a blog. Get comfortable with the blog. Even if, and correct me if I'm wrong, Aaron, and I'm just going to, say this from my experience. If you're uncomfortable writing, maybe just post a picture or two. Get in the habit of working on that platform. Would you agree?
I agree so much. And I think the biggest mistakes that folks make with, besides not getting started, is being intimidated or trying to write in some kind of business voice, like, I'm a businessman writing a blog. It's like the most engaging content is the most real. And that even goes, the way we're talking right now is the exact, that would be the most compelling blog post in the world, because it's conversational, it's human, it's more, you know, it builds more connection. So, you know, when that donut shop owner makes a website, you don't want to have, you know, things like stock photos and
yeah. It could be like behind the scenes in the kitchen, Mary at the cash register, or whatever.
Yeah, it's and what's important is this is kind of the next concept. If I do, I want to move on to step three because it's so important that the second biggest mistake business owners make when they blog or when they those that do start putting stuff on their website. And you're right, pictures, anything to do with people love insider perspective. So. Mm-hmm. Donut cam or something, whatever, but this is what we call syndication. So a lot of blog small business owners that blog, they think their job is done when they hit publish. Okay, I wrote a 5 steps to being more healthy or 5 donut recipes you can't live without. They publish the blog and then they wait. While we say, you know, don't blog and wait, blog and syndicate. What that means is take that blog post, push it out to social media channels, to Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. I mean, how cool would it be to have a pin board of all these different breakfast recipes and donuts on Pinterest? That's a visual site, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it's like go meet your audience, go meet the residents, your community, where they are, both online and offline. So they're not on your website. You need to go engage them on Facebook. You need to, you know, Facebook gives so much information about demographics and psychographics. You can literally find your target audience on Facebook for pennies on the dollar.
So basically what you're saying is just go be a member of the community.
Yeah,
start engaging, start talking. Don't worry about your donut shop. Your donut shop or whatever business you have should be the last thing on your mind. Your mission is to engage, talk, make connections, so on and so forth.
Yeah, make friends. I mean, if you look at your community, so, you know, the core is, you know, set up a website. We just said set up a website, have a basic opt-in, blog on a regular basis. Now you look at community. What community is, that's your target customers, your existing clients, and influencers. So, you know, offline and online. So who else, do those patrons frequent? So someone that uses a donut shop might also, that soccer mom also probably goes to athletic or sporting goods stores. I'm not sure that a sporting goods store would partner with a donut shop. That might be a little bit awkward.
Hey, but you never know.
But there's a lot of other businesses, maybe, bakeries, cupcake shops, kids' party places, you know. So reach out to those other businesses and put together campaigns and partner and say, hey, why don't we do at the street fair, let's have a donut dunk tank, or let's have, you know, contests. So those are things you could do in your community. And in terms of online, it's the same thing. You know, these soccer moms, these donut patrons, they're buying from other businesses. They're on other websites. So it's really easy to find out where they're hanging out online and just add to the conversation.
Absolutely. And we just talked about a couple different things. And if you're in the car listening to this, don't worry. You can get all this information at getmyfreecourse.com. That's Aaron's website. It's getmyfreecourse.com. Super resourceful guide. If you're like, oh, shoot, do I get the blog? Do I get the apps? Don't worry. Just everything will be on there. I'll put it in the show notes. You know, that way you're not missing out. So let me just switch gears for a minute here. Now, you've spent the last 20 years working with business and their marketing efforts and advertising in the Silicon Valley area. I want to say about 15 years of it.
Yeah, plus or minus, not to date myself, but exactly, yeah.
So how did you find working in Silicon Valley, being in the hub, especially in that time frame of the tech boom and business and everything?
You know what's funny is most people would think that what I did is absolute career suicide. And what I mean by that is I was working my most recent kind of day job. I was at a company called Caring.com, which was a rapidly growing startup in the heart of Silicon Valley, well venture funded company. I was a vice president of online there. I had a great job, multiple six figure income. And I was driving in a car for 2.5 hours each way, not seeing my new daughter before she went to bed at night. And I just said, you know what? I'm going to quit. And that's why, walking away from stock options and all that. So, you know, I helped a lot of business owners as an employee, but for the last couple of years, I totally walked away from all that. I had the best wife in the world, a newborn daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, we've had another kid, and you know, she just said, "You have the passion, the knowledge. Just let's do it. I know you've done the research. I know you have the expertise." So we just did a huge leap of faith and came down here to San Diego. Less than 2 years ago.
Uh-huh. Well, so let me ask you this, because I actually am now really going through that. I left corporate America in September. I was offered a position in October for me and my family with some really life-changing money for an opportunity in New York. I went as far as going out there with my wife. I accepted the job. We found a place. On the eve of signing the lease for our new house, I went to my wife and I said, "You know what? I got to be honest. There's been something eating at me for the past week. I can't put my finger on it. I don't know what it is, but I want to start my own thing." And my lovely wife, she said, "You know what? I haven't told you this, but," and she pretty much had the same thing. And the reason why I felt that, and it sounds like you did too, is you ever seen the movie Click with Adam Sandler?
I have.
So in the movie, for those of you who haven't watched it, he has this remote and he basically fast forwards his life and it becomes this big success. But when he's fast forwarding his life, he's essentially just almost robotic. He's going through the motions. There's no human element to that. And that's what I thought of while I was in New York. I said, okay, in the career that I was in and the position I was taking, I was extremely good at. I can do it in my sleep, but at what cost? Am I going to be up there 2, 3, 4, 5 years going through the motions, not feeling fulfilled?
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's exactly what you did.
I commend you so much. I'm so proud of you. I know we just met, but I get so stoked to hear that because, you know, what's funny is we're all raised. I was raised in the Midwest, and there's this notion of, you know, you this whole, not to get Seth Godin-ish on you, but you know, if you've read Lynchpin, like the whole structure is broken. That whole industrial era construct of, you know, follow this course, go to this school, work in this factory, or get this. You know, the white collar jobs are all really factory jobs because you're producing stuff all day for somebody else. And what used to be the only remaining thread of logic in that was that, well, at least this is secure, at least this is stable. And now that's going away too, because, you know, with competition and commoditization, it's like there's the biggest risk to me that made me make that leap was that I'd rather be in control than have somebody else just pivot one day and say, you know, we know we had this these stocks in mind, but we're going out of business and we're getting rid of your position. I mean, I don't know if you were ever laid off or
I was, and just to clarify, I said I left corporate America in September. That was due to a layoff. My company at the time was bought out by another major company, laid off probably over 2,000 employees, and so, yeah, I literally just went through that a couple months ago.
Yeah, and it's psychologically and financially devastating depending on how vested you are. And people look at, you know, you build a family figuratively and literally at your company if you're there for a while. And finally, it's just I'm in love with that idea that I think it's almost unfortunate how many of our friends and family and associates out there just they think it's a risk that they can't absorb. And then I don't know if you've seen this, Chris, but days or weeks into it, you're like, why didn't I do this earlier? It's not that scary. There's so much opportunity in the world that anywhere you look, you can find opportunity. And because you get all the profit yourself, it's actually easier in my mind to do it yourself than to work for a company.
Absolutely. And it doesn't even necessarily mean you have to hate your job. Because when my company was bought out, I loved what I did. I was in corporate America. I don't know if I was the only one that loved being in corporate America. I loved what I did. And I wasn't even upset about the buyout because I looked at it as if I owned this business, I would have done the exact same thing. You know,
yep.
I wasn't mad one bit. So if you're currently in corporate America and you do like your job, you know, not everyone has to hate their job to have that gut feeling that they want to go off and do their own thing or not even just in business. It could be anything. That just there's something that it sounds like you and I both had that I'm sure a lot of people have as well, is that inner gut feeling.
And you know what? That's not to, to poo-poo the idea of the corporate America. I mean, the question is, are you in a role where you feel engaged and you're applying talent and you wake up in the morning? Here's the litmus test. Here's how easy it is. Do you wake up in the morning and go, I can't wait to do what I'm about to do? Or do you pull the covers over and hit the snooze button and dread what you're about to do? I mean, ultimate freedom is not measured by the metrics aren't finances or revenue or anything. It's in my mind, I've learned the hard way and from talking to so many entrepreneurs and experiencing this, that there's no correlation between money and happiness. Happiness is, you know, am I spending the amount of time with my family that I want to? Am I surrounding myself? Am I servicing my community? And am I doing what I want to do every day?
Yeah.
I have a lot of friends that love their job. They're engaged. They're intrapreneurs, we call them. You know, they're innovating within companies, and that's just fine. But if you don't, then there's never. If you don't like what you're doing, if you have a passion you want to pursue, you know, starting a business now costs a couple $100s. Mm-hmm. You know, 5 years ago, it was $10,000 or $20,000. So, I mean, as you know, I mean, to do this podcast, what would it cost you to do a radio show 10 years
ago? Oh, my, I don't even want to think about it.
You know what I mean? So I get a little bit off topic here. And I'm so passionate about helping people make that leap because it's actually a baby step.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And at the basic function of being a human being to help another person, it really does feel good. And for someone like you to help these business owners grow and even if it's just seeing the light, it's probably very rewarding on your part.
It is. You know, it's you know, that's really the why I do this, because as we started in the opening of the show, is that business owners, they're in business for a reason. They don't want to fail. They don't want to, have to get a second loan or extend their line of credit. They just, you know, I'm sure you've read the E-Myth and you're familiar with that model. You know, because you know how to drill teeth does not mean you're prepared to open a dental practice, because the primary role of that practice is to acquire customers and to market to their customers. And they, you know, so that everybody, each of us start out as a technician. Like, I want to cut hair. I want to be a dentist. But, you know, those skills are 10% of your success. The rest is, are you a good business person? Are you willing to acquire the skills to learn how to market and do that kind of thing?
Absolutely. And actually, Aaron has mentioned a couple fantastic books so far. So, again, don't worry. These are all going to be in the show notes. If you haven't read them already, I highly suggest you do. It's almost like when I read a really good book, and I don't know if you remember this, back in the day, when you were watching, say, a VHS movie, and it was either Channel 3 or Channel 4, and on Channel 3, it was almost like hazy, and then you put it to Channel 4, and you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, it's that crystal clear. That's almost what happens when you read a fantastic book, right? Or get educated on something. It's almost like you're switching to Channel 4, and all of a sudden, everything's just clear. Like, you just feel better.
You know, two thoughts really quick, if I might, because that really triggered something. Is the number one, you're absolutely right, and what's important is to be on an information diet. And what that means is, I call this learning on demand, and there's another great podcast called Internet Business Mastery. And this is one of their concepts that they got from, I think, Dan Sullivan. But the point is, the only way that a business owner or entrepreneur is gonna get traction is by focusing and doing things in a linear fashion. You know, I turn on my computer now, and before I talk to you, I'm like, you know, I got to publish syndicate this blog post. I have to respond to emails. I have to look at this product. And all of a sudden, you know, you'll spend 2 hours just figuring out what to do, right? So an information diet and learning on demand is that, you know, if you're a small business owner and the first thing you need to do is put up a basic WordPress site, then shut off everything else, close all the books, turn off your email, just do that. And then if you want to write your first blog post, spend a few hours just doing that. And so what happens is we refer all these books and ideas and courses, and you know, we have that, I call it the never file. So if you bought, you know how you download ebooks and courses, and you have that folder with 75 different things, and then all of a sudden what happens is 2 years later when your hard drive is too full, you just delete it.
I have a couple of those folders, I'll admit.
So that's, you know, that's one concept, is like you can do this if you only look at the immediate goal. The other concept, when you said channel 2 and 3, you know, I like to use metaphors and analogies because it helps business owners really understand. Once they have the mindset right, then they get behind doing the task. So mm-hmm. when you said channel 2 and channel 3, that's really important, because when we grew up, do you remember when, you know, there was a couple channels? When I was a kid, you could either watch Little House on the Prairie and Disney, or, you know, The Bionic Man or whatever. There was three channels, you know, NBC, ABC, and CBS. And then cable came out, and there were hundreds and thousands. And then the internet came out, and there's a long tail of millions of ways to consume media. Well, guess what? That fourth step is that as small business owners, we are the publishers of media. We're not the consumers of media. So when we talk about putting helpful information like blog posts together and syndicating that out to an audience, for a business owner to have that mindset of that they have to build and reach an audience just like you do with this podcast. So, you know, I need to look at, as a donut shop owner, how many people are on my email list? How many people are following me on Facebook and Twitter? You know, that is my audience. So when I publish content, that is my reach. And by having that mindset of, it's not just about writing content, it's about delivering that content to a growing audience, that really helps businesses get their priorities straight.
And let me just clarify something real quick, because I was just at New Media Expo this past weekend in Vegas. If you have not heard of New Media Expo, I would highly look it up, guys, because, I mean, just what you can learn, it's mind-blowing. I can't even put it into words. That I'm still pumped from the weekend. But the reason why I bring that up and kind of cut in there is because you mentioned about Facebook likes and all that. And one of the things I learned is it does not matter if you have 100 likes or 10,000 likes or even 1 million likes. What really matters is, are those people engaged, right? Yep. So if you're putting out your content and you only have, say, 50 likes on your fan page or whatever the platform we're talking about here, if all those people are engaged, that's almost better than having 10,000 likes with, you know, barely anybody caring. You're not just trying to chase the number of likes. You want engaged, raving fans for your donut shop, for your dry cleaner, for your sporting goods store, or whatever that is. Would you agree?
I agree to, and because I'm in San Diego, I totally agree to use a Facebook analogy. No, I'm just kidding. So here's the deal. On social media, what business owners do is they just run off in a direction mindlessly, and that doesn't mean that that's a bit, you know, the problem with that is we think we need to get a Facebook page, so we do it. We think we need likes, so we do it. We see our neighbors doing these things, so we do them. But the question to stop, take a breath, and say why. So it's not just the number of followers, and it's not even how engaged they are on Facebook. It's like, what's the end game? You know, I spoke at a convention of attorneys, and thankfully lightning didn't strike the building down, but you know, they were discussing, you know, we don't think Facebook is good for lawyers. You know, this is just where people go and hang out and talk about what they had for breakfast and share pictures of the kittens, you know, grappling or whatever.
Like pictures of the breakfast, things like that.
Yeah, but think of it like this, Chris. Step back and say, who is your target audience? So for the donut shop or for the law firm, let's say the donut shop, you know, if you know that you want to reach females age, you know, 32 to 45 in this geographic area that are into these interests, ask yourself, well, are all those people on Facebook? Hell yeah, they are. So are they spending an extended period of time on Facebook? Yes, they are. So it's, you can't, you know, hate the game, so to speak. Your audience is right there. You have a captive audience. You can reach them. It's incredibly simple to reach them for little or no money. So it just means that the tactics are there because there's not a strategy. So it's important to look at Facebook as a place to meet and have a conversation and add value to people, but get them back to your site so you can take the discussion into your world. What that means is, imagine if I went and joined conversations in women's groups in Las Vegas, soccer groups, parenting groups, and then I said, "Oh, check out this article. Here's another thing for the community. I'm giving."
And it's so easy to do. Like, it's right at your fingertips. You can just jump in the conversation.
Just say, "Oh, that's a good point. Have you read this? Have you seen this park? Have you done this?"
Yeah.
And they're in the group. You're in the culture. Then guess what? You say, "You know what, ladies, check this out. How interesting would it be if, I did something this weekend with my kids. We made donuts at home, and they found it to be so fun. It was so neat to do. And if you click here, you can get my recipe for doing that." So then they come back to your site, they opt into your list, and then you can market to them every week and send them weekly email newsletters and updates and offers and say, "Hey, bring a friend in for your birthday and get free donuts." On down the list. So it's about having a goal for social media, not just looking at vanity metrics like followers and likes.
Yeah, exactly. It's not about following the Joneses. You don't have to impress anybody.
Yeah, it's about having a metric and a goal for everything that you do with marketing. If you're going to send out a direct mail piece, what are you trying to accomplish? If you're placing an ad in a local journal, what are you trying to, what are the success metrics? It's the same thing for Facebook.
What's your purpose?
Don't do anything without scrutinizing the why.
Yeah, absolutely. So you bring up the kids thing, and you are a family man. You have three kids, right?
I do.
When you made that decision to leave to start your own thing, I imagine there was some excitement, some fear, but what did that really mean to you when you made that decision as a family man, right? Were you scared? Like, what initially pushed you over the edge to do it?
You know, the it's funny because you referenced the movie Click, and it was a lot like that.
I love making that reference because that's the best way to put it.
It's almost, it's the same thing with, to me, Click was a modernization of the Christmas Carol, right? It's like, if you continue on this path, here's what it's going to look like. You better change some stuff. And that's what happened. I wasn't even seeing my daughter, before she went to sleep at night. I was getting home late. But more importantly, I was stressed out. I didn't have the energy to give. And so really, it becomes, what's the worst that could happen? How could I be more stressed out and spend less time with my family than I am in this corporate Silicon Valley gig? So it was almost a desperation move, like a defensive move, more than it was, a positive one. And sometimes that's okay. Sometimes the best motivation is your back hits a wall and you go, okay, well, that's enough.
It's like fight or flight.
Exactly. Yeah. You get fired up. You know what's really amazing about it is the vision of what could be, and I don't know if anytime you put something out there. I used to be a musician, or I just wrote a book that's been published. Or any time you put something out there or do something creative, there's that kind of chance. It's like when you buy a lottery ticket, right? You have that, all of a sudden you have that opportunity and that dream, and like you're in the game, right?
It gets you kind of jittery almost.
Yeah, you have a possibility. You know, if you don't act and you don't execute, you have a zero chance. If you buy a lottery ticket, you might have a 0.001 chance, but for some reason you feel completely different, So I'm not advocating gambling. What I'm saying is when I made that move, all of a sudden the path revealed itself by just taking that first step. It's like, this is amazing, because you know what I did? Like yesterday, for example, I had a meeting and some content to write, but then I decided to go take 4 hours, go hang out with my daughter, go to the park, listen to podcasts like this one, and then come back to work at night. And that it's about that freedom and that, I could spend when I go to school events for my daughter, I'm like the only guy there. And because I'm an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. I'm wearing flip flops and have a beard here in Encinitas. So all the other parents are, usually the moms, because a lot of the fathers are at work, and they look at me like, "Hey, are you homeless or are you an entrepreneur?"
Yeah, who is this bum? Who's this unemployed bum?
Yeah, so it's really cool.
It's things like that, right? Like myself, I have a 5-year-old boy, I have a 2-year-old boy, right? And hearing you talk about this, it kind of just reaffirms this decision I made, right? When my boys start to get into school and their school events and things like that, like, I want to be there for every single last thing. And I know every parent does, but going back to my childhood, right?
Yep.
Playing sports. I was big into sports. I played baseball, golf, you name it, I played it. There was a lot of times that my dad couldn't be there.
Yep.
I come from a great family. I'm not saying anything bad, but my dad had a high demanding job. So there were certain things he couldn't be there. And I know it killed him, right? But I'd imagine that at the times he was there, because of what he did, he wasn't 100% fully vested. He, for all I know, right, he's probably thinking of what he's got to do next or the meeting he may have just had. And that's probably so common to this day with parents that are working these high pressure, high demanding corporate, whatever jobs that, okay, so you made time to go see the dance recital or the soccer game, but you're not 100% there.
Yeah, because it came at such a cost and at such a trade-off that, you know, you're kind of, your mind is not there. That's true being an entrepreneur as well. I learned, you know, what's funny is I'm talking to you from a normal brick-and-mortar office, and the irony there is I quit corporate America to work from home and have freedom and work in my pajamas, but now I'm at an office because I found, you know, after the first year of working at home, I needed to flip that switch mentally.
Mm-hmm.
and
have that separation.
As an entrepreneur, that only increases, you know, that it's important to say my computer and my, you know, thinking about strategies and the evil scheme hatchery is over here. And when I'm engaged with my family, I'm 100% engaged with my family. Is that always that simple? Of course not. But it's important to draw those borders, whether you're doing it in a day job environment or as an entrepreneur.
You know what? You're right. And I think a lot of people, they get romanticized about the notion of working from home, but it's, some people can't do it, right? I'm the same way like you. Like, I need that separation. I need to get out of the house to maybe even go to the Starbucks or whatever and work a little bit. Because sometimes it just feels good getting dressed and going out into the world, right? You can't just stay holed up in the house all day.
Absolutely. It's so funny that you know, there are positives and negatives and trade-offs, but by being in an office, a physical office, I get more done in less time, and it just works for me. Some people love to work at home. I feel like I can't really shift gears if I'm sitting around in my slippers and with a hot chocolate.
I'd almost say it's the same as having a dirty car, right? Your car may be dirty inside and out. It may not be a slob of a car, but it may be just a little dirty, but you're so used to it, it doesn't bother you. Once you clean your car, though, that's one of the greatest feelings in the world is getting my car cleaned, because you just feel better.
You know, it's the mindset, and you almost,
yeah,
you almost feels like the car runs better and like is thanking you in some weird way.
Same thing with the garage. For people who have garages, try cleaning your garage. Try cleaning your room. I mean, you could probably apply this analogy to a bunch of different things, but once you do that small thing, I wish I knew what that was.
There's a good website. You might have seen Zen Habits. You ever follow that site?
No.
So Zen Habits, if you want to put that in the show notes, it's really, really cool. And it's this idea that, well, there are many ideas there, but one of the core things I've taken away as an entrepreneur is that physical and mental clutter are going to just short circuit the heck out of you until you address them. Mm-hmm. So when you eliminate superfluous items from your surroundings and in your mind. So, you know, we all run around with these open loops. So everything in your mind that you haven't addressed yet, mm-hmm, is an open loop. And even if you're not consciously thinking about it, your brain is trying to solve these problems. So if there's something that you want to address on your site, or a content you want to write, or a customer you have to respond to, these things are eating up mental space and creative real estate. So by just writing them down and prioritizing them and getting them out of your mind into Evernote or into even a physical notepad, you know, from taking all that confusion and putting it, for some reason, when you write, when you get all this stuff out of your brain, even if you don't do it yet, your brain kind of goes, ah, and then there's a sigh there. It's really a, it's a very powerful thing to do.
It probably makes you feel lighter. If that, if anybody gets what I'm saying, like, you just feel lighter, you feel better.
That's the kind of minimalist movement that's happening, I think, is because we're, you know, not to get too deep and trippy on you here, but as
no,
human
please. Beings, that's what we're here for.
It's like, I used to live in Berkeley, man. you know, it's lighter is like what we mean by lighter is that by removing all those things. And human beings aren't meant to have this much stimuli, if that makes sense. Like, you know, we evolved in this environment where there were plants and predators and very, not all this digital media and traffic and all these things. So there's an overwhelm that's always happening for us. So we have to do what we can to simplify and eliminate all of those all the stimuli around us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what would you say going forward is the one thing that small business, really any business owners, whether it's a brick and mortar or online, I mean, what would you say like the top three things that they would need to focus on? Take all the other clutter out in terms of marketing and advertising. Take all the other clutter out. Forget about, you know, following the Joneses. If they were to just focus on three simple things, what would be your suggestion?
Dude, you are a genius because you just took the marketing discussion we had and the Zen simplicity discussion, merged them together. Was that intentional?
That, you know what? No, that just happened on the fly.
That's pretty cool. Okay. So let's simplify our business life. So the number one of the three, before we do anything, it's like, stop what you're doing. Do not act. Just go in a quiet room and think about that avatar, and paint a picture of who your ideal customer is. That means give them a name, give them, you know, a pants or a dress or a kilt or whatever they wear. Mm-hmm. You know, like, literally make it a real person and look at what their desires, hopes, fears are, and really, really make it real. The second, so you have a crystal clear vision. So that's number one.
Mm-hmm. And how far down do you dive? Do you just say soccer mom, or do you say a 35-year-old soccer mom with two kids who's also a stay-at-home mom? Like, do you keep diving down?
I want you to, the business owner, to get to the point where it is Janet, the 34-year-old soccer mom, who has a part-time job selling, you know, Arbonne Cosmetics, who has has a daughter named Jenny that's seven, and a son named, I'm talking about that you could write, not to the point of writing their biography, but you have a clear picture and name, and you know what their interests are, where they spend their time, because the more time you spend on this is counterintuitive, but what we want to do is go and start placing ads and start, talking to people on Facebook and doing all these things. That everything we do is less effective if we don't really nail and get inside the conversation.
Who that person is.
Yeah. So that's number one is who is that avatar that is your perfect customer, mm-hmm. and what is the key problem that you're trying to solve or solution or pleasure you're trying to get. Now donuts, I love the example because most people would say, well, it doesn't apply here. That's too hard. But look at this. I mean, you're trying to give really a pleasurable experience and bring family together and increase a family bond. So some people would say you're giving them sugar or you're giving them a treat. But the real, you know, what is the transformation that you're trying to help them with? If you're an accountant, if you're a lawyer, if you have a donut shop, what is the problem you're trying to solve? Because, you know, you can't stop. Like if you, you know, there's a story in Jay Abraham's book, Getting Everything You Can Out of All You've Got, where a guy goes to Home Depot and says, you know, I need a screw, an 8-inch, you know, screw. And he goes, and the Home Depot guy is thinking, no, you need holes. And my argument to that is, no, you don't. If you're building a playhouse for your kid, you want to be a hero to your son. Mm-hmm. So your goal is not to drill holes or even to build walls. It's to be a hero and bring pleasure to your son. If you look at the big transformational experience you're trying to elicit in your customers, that's important. So sorry that one was so long.
No. It's okay. And real quick, before we go on to step two, do you follow John Lee Dumas and Entrepreneur on Fire and all that?
Absolutely, to the point where I feel like I'm going to ignite.
Okay. Okay, good. Because that's why the reason why I bring that up is that that is exactly, you know, what he tells people too, right? And I'm a big follower of his. I was actually a guest at his party in Vegas this past weekend. So we really got to talk. I mean, super, super great, great guy. As nice as he sounds on the radio or on the podcast, I'm sorry, that's how he is in real life. And one of the things he pushes people to do, and I heard him give this advice to a couple people over the weekend, was they need to find their avatar. And once they do, like you're saying, they need to niche that down to the every last detail of this person. So step one, find your avatar. What's step two?
So great. And by the way, John is the sweetest dude in the world. I met him at Social Media Marketing World in San Diego, and I'm a member.
He is, right? Like, he's just awesome.
He's just – and his success shows it within a year and a half. He's just a skyrocket because he found that avatar. And you know what? Here's a total relevant example. Number two is to find a unique value proposition. So a problem you're a unique, you know, what do you do? You're not a donut shop owner, you're not a podcaster, you're not a dentist. So number two is, what is that unique selling proposition?
Okay.
You can call it a unique value proposition, but a USP is the most common term.
Uh-huh.
And what that means is, when you go place an ad for your donut shops, and if you know your avatar, you know the problem you solve. Most people that place an ad, they go like this: Jim's Donuts, established 1958. Come on down, or you know, donuts. And then you look at a law firm's website; it says bankruptcy lawyer, and everything is about them. Not only is it about them, but it's a commoditization of this is what I do. Well, how about this? What do you do differently? Do you make donuts cheaper, faster, more deliciously, with a unique process? The biggest variety of donuts. Do you have the freshest donuts?
Yeah.
Do you have the healthiest donuts. So
we're the only one in town with gluten free, peanut free.
Exactly.
Whatever.
It's like do you have do you make donuts every hour? Do you yada yada yada? Do you make the biggest donuts? Yeah. Do you make the fastest donuts? Do you make customized donuts on demand?
We have the cleanest floors in all of Las Vegas.
Yeah, the only donut hair salon, whatever. No, I'm just kidding. But it's like, you know, so it's like the point is, there is something unique. And if it's not unique, you need to niche it down further. If you're not the only gluten-free donut place in Nevada, you can be in Las Vegas. So it's that unique message. So you have the avatars, the market. Now it's time to look at the message. What do you do that nobody else does? And I challenge any business owner, because it's not that hard. You'd think, what do you mean I'm a bankruptcy lawyer? Everybody, you know, I do bankruptcy like everybody, like Tom, Dick, and Harry down the street. Well, do you have a unique process? Do you have, because guess what? By giving something your own name, all of a sudden it's unique. Like, they can't get the Fletcher bankruptcy, five-step Fletcher bankruptcy audit anywhere else. They can't get the 60-day guaranteed bankruptcy. So it's like, so what is your unique value proposition? So avatar, unique value proposition, and lead with that message. Your website needs to not be focused on you. Your ads should be focused on you. It should be focused on how you're unique and how you can uniquely serve your audience.
And your avatar, really.
Well, yeah, that avatar is the audience. I'm glad you actually corrected me, because audience implies, you know, multiples, and the avatar is one person. You need to always be speaking to one person.
Exactly. So step one, find your avatar. Step two, find your USP and market it towards your avatar, right? Just that person. So what's step three?
Step three is to give education-based content to your audience where they are. So here's what we did. We just made everything that we're ever going to do more, you know, 10 times more successful with better traction, because most businesses start with that. Like, I need to go out to Facebook. I need to send a direct mail. I need to place an ad. I need to design a website. and they design a website with some with a web designer who doesn't understand marketing, or they do it themselves and there's no strategy there. But by slowing down and focusing on the avatar and the USP, now I am going to take all the problems, all the questions that I know my avatar has, and wrap that around with my USP, and I'm going to put blog posts on some media sites. I can send out direct mail. I can do email marketing. I can do local fairs and say, taste, you know, the only gluten-free donuts in Vegas. Or we make donuts every hour, or customize your donut. And everything I'm going to do is going to be so much more successful. And as long as I have a call to action on that stuff, and I'm getting them back to my email list where I can follow up with them, then, you know, we could start it. If we use those three steps, we could crush every other donut vendor in Vegas in 90 days.
So let's just say, let's take it offline for a second, right? Because you brought up something good. You're doing an event and your thing is gluten-free. Would going on the giving an education based post or pitch or whatever that is, would the donut owner, I'm the donut owner, would it be a good idea for me to tell people what is gluten and why gluten-free is important to maybe go down that road?
So sometimes we have to educate our markets, and that's a really, really good point, because the best customer is the one that gets, that either has medical restrictions or is on a health kick, that already knows that gluten is not good for us, or you know, I don't want to get controversial, but it's maybe it's not good for them. So that's the best customer. They already have a need. They understand their need. But when you have to educate your audience, that's the next set of your target audience. That's the next group of avatars, is people who want to be more healthy, that love the taste of donuts. But then you're going to educate them on why your gluten-free donuts are the best out there, and why it's important to avoid gluten, right? Mm-hmm. And then here we go again. So when we're coming up with those 50 or 100 blog topics, now I can go, what are other gluten-free foods? I mean, how much controversy, how much press, how much traction would I get if I created something called a fitness donut?
Yeah.
You know, it's like there's
that, you know what? That's actually not a bad idea.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, let's do it now. You know, Dean Jackson and Joe Polish, that are mentors of mine, they have a show called I Love Marketing, and they always talked about the positioning of the breakfast cookie. So in Canada, where Dean lives, they serve, in this his favorite cafe, they serve breakfast cookies. Now, what's hilarious about that is you're taking, you know, the cookie that was only, you know, consumed for desserts or snacks. Uh-huh. You put some healthy granola in there or something, now you have a breakfast cookie. So, you know, it's all about position.
That's awesome.
So is there a fitness donut out there? That'd be hilarious, because it's counterintuitive. You know, I remember my wife and I did the San Diego Marathon. I saw this guy who was about 65, literally running at about mile 11 with a Bud Light. And I thought that was the coolest thing I've ever seen, because it was so contrarian. It's like, he was like, well, this is the best carbs you can get, you know. And I was like, you are my hero. But, you know, the idea of a fitness donut is pretty hilarious.
If anybody out there is listening and they have a donut shop, I don't own a donut shop. We just made this whole thing up, just, you know, to give examples. But if you have a donut shop, I would love for you to try to make a fitness donut and get back to us and let us know how that worked out.
Dude, I think
that's genius, really.
I love the organic nature of the conversation, because when we started this chat, who would have known that the kernel, the end result, the crystallization would have been the fitness donut?
Like, I'm excited. I really wish I had a donut shop now, because that's genius. It's perfect.
Yep. Donutfit.com. Ooh, let me check that. No, I'm just kidding.
Go check it out right now. Lock it up.
Somebody do it, man.
So our time, it's been an hour almost. Flew by. So let's kind of wrap up. Find your avatar, first and foremost. Find your USP, right? Basically just give. Give education, but just also give, right?
Give. Join conversations. Give free recipes out there. Syndicate your blog posts. Answer people's questions they have online about breakfast or about gluten or about donuts. And don't, you know, it's that whole adage of reciprocity is – in karma. It exists in the marketing world more than anywhere. Give, 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 give.
Yeah, it's not about you. Get over it. Like, stop pushing your... I was going to say crap, but it's not crap. Just stop making it about you. Like, get real. It's 2014. Yeah. Start making it about your customer.
In my dating life, you know, the most success I used to have is a conversation with a woman would be, okay, enough about me. Tell me, what do you think about me?
Boom. There you go.
Just kidding.
Aaron, it has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for being on the show. I personally had a great time. I really want someone to make a fitness donut. So
me too. And I want to do a shameless plug. This is a free resource, and it's what we're talking about in action. Mm-hmm. Is that if the listeners, and sorry, my voice is a little bit hoarse. I don't normally sound like Tony Robbins, but that's not a bad thing. If they go to getmyfreecourse.com, that's a simple video course that comes in your email, and it walks you through everything we're talking about, from setting up a basic site to creating content and engaging your audience. And it's totally free with no offers associated with it.
No hidden strings attached, no nothing like that.
No pitches, just pure fitness donuts 100% of the time.
And if they want to connect with you on Twitter... They want to let you know that they did create the fitness donut. Where could they find you?
Twitter is Geek Free, and then abbreviation for marketing, MKTG. So Geek Free, MKTG. I'd love to connect with anybody and answer any questions they have on Twitter as well.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you, Aaron. I personally had a blast. I hope you did. And we'll catch up another time.
Cheers. Thanks so much, Chris.